Welcome to another episode of the Decent Rowing Podcast. Today we're going to be talking about the common mistakes people make on the ergo. Last week we talked about catch and drive specific mistakes. Today we're going to be talking more about the finish position, coming into the finish and the recovery. So this is a summary of a playlist that we have on our website. It's under the 15 common mistakes and solutions rowing on the ergo. So if you're a member, you can log in and look at that playlist. If not, you can sign up for a free membership to see it that way if you'd like. So when we're talking about the finish, Ken, what's the main thing that you see people doing wrong on an ergo at the finish?
The most common thing without doubt is people slumping. And so not having their pelvis in the right position and sitting tall at the finish. It's very important when you're trying to be powerful at the finish. So once the drive phase is largely underway and you're heading towards the finish, then you want to be able to use your arms and finish off with your body in an effective manner. So it's really important to be able to sit tall at the finish and make sure that your pelvis is vertical. Often you'll find, particularly with young beginner rowers, is that they don't really understand what the pelvis does. You'll also find with many growing adolescent boys in particular that you'll find it's difficult for them sometimes to be able to get the pelvis to the right positions, especially in the rock over, because their muscles and bones are growing at different rates, and so it's difficult for them to do that without significant stretching. But the most important thing really at the finish is to try and keep your pelvis vertical. Indeed, you want the pelvis to be vertical pretty much all the way through the rowing stroke. It's about having your core turned on and sitting tall.
Yeah, so a useful way of working out if you're sitting tall or not, if the pelvis is vertical or not, is to either imagine someone's pulling on your hair or get someone to pull on your hair, like straight up, and you'll sit as tall as you possibly can just to try and maintain that. And you'll feel like your spine is like aligned and you're sitting up on your sit bones. You might almost feel like you're sitting a little bit forward. And that's that sort of straight lower back situation. You don't want to have a curve in the lower back or what we'd call slumping. And so that's a useful way to work out if you're in that position. Also, I've got a couple of videos that show what that looks like on the ergo, so it might be worth having a look at them. But basically, it's feel as if someone's pulling you up by your hair and trying to sit nice and tall. And when you rock over, maintaining that feeling of being sitting up, but just rocking over a little bit.
Yeah, and that sensation of sitting really tall, if you're dealing with school kids, then often you'll find an easy way to do that is to hold your hand above their head, but a few inches above their head, and ask them to try and hit the hand with their head as they rock over, as they sit tall at the finish, and then when they start to rock over. So it's really just about another way of using a different set of words to try and get athletes to sit tall with their pelvis. And so when you're coming into the finish, so just finish the drive phase, coming into the finish, the next thing to watch for really is what their elbows and shoulders are doing at the finish. You want to make sure that the elbows are pointing out. And it's interesting, and we've got a good video on the website, not in this series, but elsewhere on the website, that where Siona discusses how it feels at the finish. And she finds if she tries to lift her elbows up at the finish, then that tends to lift her shoulders up. And we don't want to have the shoulders lifted up near the ears. We want to have the shoulders quite flat in a strong position. And so she finds it a lot easier to think about putting her elbows out rather than up. And so elbow position at the finish, you want to maintain a very strong position with the finish of the stroke so that you've got the maximum power on the handle right the way through to the body, essentially. You don't want to hit your body, but you want to have it so you've got power on right the way through. And if you try to have your elbows too low or too high, then you find you can't apply the right amount of power in that last little bit of the ergo stroke.
Yeah, so I guess the technique that we're talking about here on the ergo is something that relates to just rowing along, training normally, something like that. Also translatable into the boat. So like an ergo technique that specifically mirrors what you want to see in the boat. You've probably seen quite a few, if you've watched any YouTube videos of the elite athletes trying to go for good ergo scores, you probably see them leaning back a long way, like, and drawing the handle all the way through almost to their neck, like right up on the top of their chest. And the reason they do this is because you can actually eke a little bit more power out of an ergo if you're trying to get a good score. And good and getting a good score or a good time for a 2K erg is all about how much power you can make. But if you try and row like that in a boat, it's impossible because you imagine the oars would be so deep in the water, or they you wouldn't be able to tap out because your handles would hit your chest, and just it just and the yeah basically the arc of the handles don't come through in a way that would make rowing like that possible. So while you can row like that to get a good score potentially, if you're an elite athlete trying to get into a crew. Something like that. Bear in mind, if you're selecting that crew based on ergo scores, you have to keep in mind that they're not going to be able to generate anywhere near as much power as they're doing on the ergo in the boat because of the way the rigging works. It's just simply not possible to row like that, leaning a long way back and drawing the handle right up towards the neck area. You would have seen this in plenty of ergo tests, I'd imagine, Ken.
Oh, lots. And indeed, there's nothing particularly wrong with doing that. It depends what your purpose is. Some athletes I've coached are actually very good on the ergo, have held world records on the ergo, and at the same time very fast in a boat, but they row differently in a boat than they do on the ergo. So unless you've got the ability to change how you row depending on whether you're on an ergo or in a boat, I'd suggest pick which one you're working for. And row like that. So if you're rowing on an ergo and you aim to compete on an ergo, sure, do things slightly differently, particularly around the finish. The catch is pretty similar, but around the finish, do things differently in order to make sure that you can get the best score. But if you're training to row in a boat, then I'd suggest row the ergo like a boat. As Lachlan says, you can learn lots of habits on an ergo that if you try and put them in a boat, it won't work. So just define in yourself what you're doing and what the purpose of the ergo is. If you're using the ergo as a tool in itself to compete in indoor rowing, fine. We've got ways of dealing with that so you get good scores. But if you're looking to use the ergo as an adjunct to helping you row well on a boat, then row like you would on a boat, even to the extent of when you come into the catch, have a small lift of the hands at the catch, just to reinforce that concept of this is training for a boat. But that technique of leaning a long way back and pulling the handle right up to your chin, you've got to be pretty good at changing how you row if you can do that on an ergo and not try to do it in a boat. So I'd suggest choose what you're going to do and then row like that on the ergo.
Yeah, having a really long rowing stroke on an ergo if you're trying to get a good score is very important, so that's why it works. So even so, shorter people can draw it all the way up to their chest towards their neck. They get that little bit of extra length, which is impossible to do in a boat, but it is possible to do on an ergo to get a better score. That's why taller people, or one of the reasons why taller people tend to be much better on getting good ergo scores, because their strokes naturally a lot longer. But sometimes when they get in a boat, they find it hard to convert that ergo score into a boat score because the rigging of the boat puts certain limitations on what they can do with their height sometimes. So this is for really, really tall people.
Yeah, and so once you get through the finish and you want to have a strong position with your elbows out and you want to make sure your shoulders aren't up, you'll see some people tend to shrug at the finish. And so what they're doing is they're lifting their shoulders up near their ears at the finish, and then as they tap out, they drop their shoulders dramatically. Now, that sort of technique is just largely wasted effort at that point. And I'd suggest in most people not as powerful as having your shoulders flat to start with. So when you're pulling it through to the finish, make sure that you have your elbows out and your shoulders down. Now, by down, I don't mean any strange position. It's really just not lifted up around your ears, so not hunched up. Because hunched up like that, you're using a set of muscles that are really contributing nothing to the rowing stroke. And it's going to give you a lesser score if you do it that way. And it's not a good technique to have in a boat either. You want to have your shoulders flat at the finish. So be very mindful of what you're doing with your upper body at that last little bit of the stroke. A strong position, shoulders flat and elbows out, so that you get the most power you can right the way through to the finish.
Yeah, I think shoulders are a perfect example of a gauge of stress in a lot of athletes. So if you find an athlete who's quite stressed about rowing on the rowing machine, maybe they're thinking about lots of things, they want to get everything just right, they'll tend to carry that stress into their shoulders, and their shoulders will be up near their ears. They don't feel this, but it's quite obvious to look at. So one of the reasons why it might be because you're giving them too much information to process, maybe just focus on some simple things. But if you told them a few things to work on, their shoulders go towards their ears, and you tell them to work on their shoulders as well, you're not going to have a good day. So, yeah, shoulders often a reflection of how tense the athlete is, how much they're thinking about what they're doing. And, it really raises those shoulders up.
You'll find, too, that grip's an important aspect of that. You don't have to have a tight grip. In fact, the best rowing I've seen on an ergo was when Joel was doing a marathon on an RP3 in world record time. And at the finish, he was pulling it high up, yes, and as we were talking before about having a long finish. But if you looked at his hands at that point, they were really relaxed on the handle. It looked like it was barely hanging onto the handle at all, but still doing a world record pace. So it's important when you have that finish to have your relaxed hands, relaxed shoulders, not that dissimilar to the catch or indeed any other part of the stroke. You want to have a lot of relaxation in there. So if you've got a tight grip at the finish, that's going to add to lifting your shoulders and add to that tenseness in all those small muscles that we just want to avoid. So be particularly careful about your grip at the finish as well. Because your elbows are coming out a bit, then you do tend to have a small bit of a loose grip anyway, because otherwise you're going to find that your wrists end up on a funny angle. So loose grip, shoulders low, elbows out, and you find you get a pretty good finish at that point. The next thing we want to move to then is where do you go from there? What's the sequence and what's the most important part? So how do you see it, like when you finish the rowing stroke, what do you do next?
So I got into the habit a while back of doing this, is just having given myself a little tap down at the finish. So just like if I was in a rowing boat on the water, I'll draw the arms into the body, tap down a little bit, just as if I was tapping the blades out of the water. Exactly the same thing at the catch, but the opposite. I lift my hands a little bit, just try and get that practice of lifting the hands into the catch. And I think that really helps when it comes to going back to the water. But yeah, obviously after that, you're sort of flying away with the hands, then rocking over with the body, and at the same time breaking the knees. So when you're starting to learn how to row, it's probably important to have a bit of a mechanical, like rowing stroke, like you tap down, then you put the arms out, then you pivot over with the body, then you go down the slide with your legs. But I think at the finish, it's good to start breaking the legs straight away. So you tap out, and then what I've heard people describe it as is softening the knees. So you're not rushing down the slide, but you're just taking, instead of being straight and down like you would be as if you were finishing off the rowing stroke, you just sort of relax them a little bit. The knees pop up a little bit as you rock over. So sitting tall, rocking over, I'll sort of imagine it a bit like an arc that my head's doing. So my body's basically staying straight from the finish, rocking over, and at the same time as I rock over, soften the knees, and then that puts me into a good position, strong position for the catch, and then just head down the slide. But there's a lot of overlap between the hands coming away, the body moving, and the knees softening. You probably start with the hands tapping down, the arms moving out slightly, but at the same time probably moving a bit of the body as well. And then, yeah, your body probably finish, your arms probably finish just before you start moving down with your knees, breaking down the slide.
Another good reason for having the soft knees off the finish is that it makes it easier for your hamstrings to allow the pelvis to tilt over. So particularly with inflexible athletes, adolescent teenagers, male teenagers in particular, just because of the way their body grows, will find it difficult to get a good rockover position in most cases. So softening the knees makes it a lot easier for them to do that. And a good way to demonstrate that is ask the athletes to let their knees come up. So for those athletes that are a little bit inflexible, ask them to let their knees come up a little bit and get them to rock over, so they've got their pelvis as vertical as they can do it and their body in the rock over ready for the catch position, about to come down the slide. and then ask them to hold their body in that position and just put their knees down so they're locked down solid. You'll find that with most of them, they find that a very painful experience. Well, very painful is a relative term. They get some, they feel it in their hamstrings that that's really a stretch. And so that reinforces to them that it's very important to let your knees go soft, relaxed a little bit as you come off the finish, because as your pelvis rocks over, that'll tend to push your knees up as well. And if they do that in a nice, smooth way and don't let them come up too far, then you'll find they're going to get that much better pelvis position at the finish. So when they're sitting at the finish, you want to make sure their pelvis is vertical. And most people tend to think that the ideal is to have your shoulders pull your pelvis over, so your shoulders go first and pull the pelvis over. It's actually better to try and imagine it so that you rock the pelvis over and that pushes your shoulders over. So if you see the difference, if you're sitting at the finish in a lean back position and you rock your pelvis forward, then your body has to come with it, essentially. Now, if you do it that way, then you're going to find you get a very good coming off the back position. And indeed, if you're in a rowing boat, that movement of coming off the back and transferring your upper body weight from the bow of the boat to be over your knees, then that does tend to give the boat a little bit of an acceleration at that point. So it's good to be able to do that movement in a very smooth way. So firstly, let the knees go soft at the finish, sitting tall, then rock over from the pelvis so the pelvis pushes your shoulders over and then you come into the catch position. As Lachlan says, it's good to practice doing it in a bit of a robotic fashion to start with, just so you get the sequence right. But once you've got the sequence right, then the idea is to smooth it out into one flowing movement off the back.
Yeah, I was just about to say that, I definitely make sure that once you start moving with your hands, you're destination is the catch. So you're not thinking about doing all the different parts of the rowing stroke necessarily, like all the different parts of the recovery. I usually try and see the recovery as just one thing, and the recovery is getting into that catch position. So by doing that, you can really sort of blur the lines between the arms away, body over, legs, things like that. And you're really just on a journey from just all the way to the catch, because you don't want to be hanging around. You don't want to be in the boat, especially. You don't want to be wobbling around trying to balance the boat. You just want to be tapping out nice and cleanly, coming forward and placing. So I always try and do the same thing on the ergo. If your crew is one of the ones that has like a bit of a pause at the finish, that's fine. You sort of tap down. So you get to the finish, tap down on the erg, and then when you go, it's just one smooth movement into the catch, and you're trying to do it nice and smoothly, because that's what's going to let the boat on the water run quite well, and it's going to make sure that you get out to the catch in a way that is least disruptive to the balance. And it's important to be thinking about what you're going to be doing at the catch when you get it into that finish position and that recovery position, because you're not going to be changing anything last minute. Whatever you do around the finish, in the recovery, that's what you should be prepared to take the catch with, and that should be the best position that you can get into as a rower.
So one of the things that we often find, particularly with beginners as they come down the slide, is that they tend to chase more length. And by that I mean that their body continues to move and getting more and more bent over their legs as they come to the catch. What this tends to do is that it causes a few issues at the catch, particularly in a boat. If you're continuing to move your body into the catch as you come into the catch, then you'll find that usually the first movement when they come out of the catch is to lift their body. And so we want to try and avoid that shoulder lift at the catch. And so I'd suggest as you come off the finish, rock over so that your knees go soft, pelvis vertical, rock over with the pelvis pushing the shoulder over until you get to the catch position. And you should be at the catch position at about half slide, if not a little bit before, depending on your flexibility. You'll find it's easier to get a bit further over as your knees come up because of that issue we talked about earlier with the hamstrings. So you'll find that when you get to that catch position, about half slide, then you want to make sure you hold it there. Another thing to contemplate when you're at that point on that recovery is to make sure that your arms are fully extended. So that not that your arms are fully totally out of your sockets, but you want them so they're really hanging off your frame, rather than so when you do take the catch, you've actually hanging off your frame with your tendons and bone rather than holding it in holding your arms in place with your shoulder muscles. So when you get to about half slide, I just check at the same time that you've got your arms fully extended, and then don't let your arms or your body move all the way into the catch until when you get to the catch, then that small uplift with the hands and pick up the load with your feet, not with your arms and shoulders, and push away. It's critical to be ready to do that movement, and you should be ready by half slide on the recovery in virtually all cases.
Yeah, so when I was talking before about getting into that position off the finish that you're going to hold to the catch, you'll get around the finish position, you'll rock over, you'll start coming down the slide. And although you'll try and keep the same position, it's important to realize what it's going to feel like to you when you come into the catch. So as you come into the catch, you've got no weight and you go to change direction. The way your body's going to want to do is fall down and collapse, like Ken said. So you're going to want to drop your shoulders down further and bend over, and it's going to become a weak position, unless when you come into the catch, you consciously think, okay, I need to think about sitting tall. That's the first bit. And then as you take the catch, you're going to be driving with the legs. You're going to have to think about not sitting too tall, because you're already thinking about sitting tall, trying to keep that position. If you start thinking about sitting really tall as you take the leg drive, there's a good chance you'll start opening with the shoulders to compensate for the load you feel in the hands. So you really want to start that catch with the leg drive. So as you come into the catch, think about sitting tall. And then as you start taking the drive, think about keep holding position. So holding that good, basically, recovery position or catch position, and driving with the legs, not, you know, collapsing like a pancake, for example. Like if you push with the legs, you might not hold your body and then you sort of flatten a bit, and you don't want to be opening up too much either. So, yeah, you'll have a tendency to want to dive into the catch or drop down to the catch. You have to fight that urge and try and sit up a bit more. And then as you take the catch, try and make sure you're not doing anything opening your body too early and really picking it up with the legs, and then saving that body movement for later, body and arm movement for later in the rowing stroke.
Yeah, I find it as good to encourage athletes, as they're almost to the catch, to turn their lower core and their glute muscles on really tight. Get them engaged so that when you do push, you'll find that that your handle speed will move at the same speed as the drive. So you won't have your seat and your handle move at the same speed. So you're not going to have your seat going out at a different speed, either slower or faster. If it's going out slower than the handle, that means you're lifting your shoulders or grabbing with your arms. If it's going out faster than the handle, it means that you haven't got your core turned on. So just watch for those things. And if you've got a mirror there on the side, then you can watch yourself do this. And if you look carefully and do it wrong in order to understand it, and so shoot your slide, for example, let your seat go out too fast, and then let your seat go out too slow and lift with the shoulders, and you'll see what it looks like in the mirror, and it'll be very clear what the right answer is. And so then just keep an eye on it and make sure that you come into the front, turn that core on, as Lachlan says, sit tall, core on, and then pick up the load and push. It's not lift, it's not grab, it's just push. The last thing I think we need to cover off on in dealing with the finish and the recovery is what you do with your head. It's important to keep your head still in the centre, and keep your chin up. If you've got your chin down on your chest, then that does have a few issues, like it can hamper breathing and the like, but it also takes your focus away from what you're doing correctly. So I'd suggest keep your eyes so they're looking pretty much horizontally out over the top of the ergo in order to make sure that you've got that head in the right position, which means that your head moves a little bit from the finish through to the catch. You would have seen plenty of people wobbling their heads in a boat, I imagine, Lachlan, but how do you relate that back to the ergo?
So I think it's something you need to have someone else look at you when you're on the erg, because if you imagine you just set the screen so it's basically perfectly where you want to have your field of vision, at the catch or the finish, you can adjust it usually. I mean, you can with most of the concept twos. Some of them are just up at a certain height. You want to try and make sure that you're not wobbling your head around while just compensating with keeping your eyes fixed on a position. So that's the main problem that people have. They're not looking in different directions when they're typically when they're rowing and moving their head, they're just moving their head around unnecessarily and staying their eyes fixed on a fixed point of view. So a good way to tell if you're doing this without getting someone to have a look at you is by wearing a cap. So if you wear a cap and you have the brim or a hat, cap's usually pretty good because it stays quite rigid on your head, and you have you can see the brim in your field of vision. When you focus on the ergo at the finish, you can see where the brim is in relation to the screen, for example. And so you want to keep it relatively similar, so be able to have the brim in relation to the screen similar throughout the whole rowing stroke. If you're someone who moves your head around, you'll see the brim moving all over the place compared to where the screen is. So it can be a good tip for just getting you to focus your head in one position and getting that active feedback by seeing where the brim is in relation to different objects in your field of vision. And then you can use that in the boat too. It's quite effective.
Yeah, one thing with that, when you're teaching people how to row on the ergo, I find particularly with young beginners, they get fascinated by the screen, and it's difficult to pay attention to the particular bits of technique we're looking at if they're focusing on what the screen's doing, how fast they're going, what their splits are, what the graph looks like or whatever. And so the first thing I do invariably with beginner rowers is I take the screen away. And so just tilt the screen back so that it can't be seen. And so then there's no distractions. It's about focusing on your technique. You'll find particularly with young school athletes that having the screen in front of them all the time is just a distraction that you can't compete with as a coach. And so move the screens out of the way. And you only really need the screen if you're trying to watch what the power curve does, or you've got a piece where you're looking for particular speed or splits. And so for general training, for teaching people how to row on an ergo, I'd take the screen away, because every time I've tried to educate beginners with the screen in their line of sight, I find that I get about half the attention on what we're trying to do. So a bit of a danger there, but a bit of a useful tip if you're teaching beginners, is remove the screen.
Yeah, the screen's really there for training purposes. As we said last week, you can use it for looking at things like power curves, things like that, which can be quite useful if you're trying to make your stroke have a certain characteristic. But yeah, otherwise it is a bit of a distraction, and beginners obviously don't know how to row in the first place, so adding another layer of distraction is just going to be a nightmare. So one of the things we haven't really talked about is what you set the drag factor on, and I guess this really depends on what you're trying to achieve. If you're trying to do a standardized test, the drag factor, you'll have a certain number, be it, 120, 110, 130, depending on what the governing body has decided is optimal. Sometimes, heavyweights will be on 130, whereas lightweights will be on 120, maybe juniors on 110, something like that. I can't remember which rowing book it was in, but one of them compared on a concept to what the which drag factor was most like rowing on the water, and the answer was on drag factor 1 was the most similar to rowing on the water. And so I guess that's probably because the flywheel that is behaves a bit differently, and you also have to change direction on the ergo, so it's probably a lot heavier than it is on the water. But yeah, I'd be interested to know what the science was behind that. But generally, I've found that when you're on the ergo, it's quite useful to have it on a lower setting, especially if you've just coming back from injury or just getting back into rowing. And bearing in mind, if you set it to a number on the drag factor, that's not necessarily a number on the side of the fan. That's not necessarily what. It doesn't correlate to the exact drag factor, because if an ergo is dirtier, it will have an effect. So basically, if you're looking for an exact drag factor, make sure you don't go off the numbers on the side. You go into the settings, select the drag factor, and that's essentially calibrating it so it will be the same each time, or that's the theory anyway.
Yeah, another thing you find too is that sometimes when you're teaching people to row on an ergo, you want to have no drag at all. just so that, because you're really purely just focusing on posture and without load on the ergo. And if you want to achieve that, then I suggest put a piece of paper over the intake for the fan, a piece of paper towel or a shirt or something, and you'll find that that reduces the drag to about nothing. So if you're trying to make sure that people have got a handle in their hands that's going to be attached to something, so they've got some semblance of what it feels like, but essentially there's no, the handle's not pulling them at all, then you'll find that you can actually get them to learn pretty well on an ergo by having zero drag, and that's by just essentially turning the fan off by putting something over it so there's no wind resistance at all. And sometimes I find, particularly with shoulder lift, that you can get them to row on an ergo without any load at all like that, and then when you take the paper off or take your shirt off the fan, then you'll find that they've got the load. And the trick is to make sure there's no difference between how they take the catch with no load or with the load. And so it's just a useful trick sometimes to educate people on the ergo, particularly if you're working on precise catch or posture position efforts.
Yeah, great for getting a quick catch on the erg, because if you have the drag factor really high, the flywheel will slow down a lot quicker on the recovery, and so you'll have to do a lot more work to get it up to speed on the next drive phase. Whereas if you have it on really low drag factor or have something covering it, it'll spin really quickly, and that means you'll have to be really quick with your legs at the catch to pick up the load, and that's a lot more similar to placing the blade on the water as opposed to on an erg. So you have to be a lot sharper with that initial leg drive. So if you're really trying to take your catch connection up a notch, yeah, lower drag factor is much better for that, because you have to be a lot more snappy with the legs, as Ken was saying, and yeah, get a better catch.
Yeah, and so as you can see, the overall process of rowing on the erg is just one continuous flying movement. We started out last week talking about the catch and how that the best way to take the catch, and now when we're talking about the recovery, we end up back in the same place as we'd expect to, because it's essentially a circular movement. So just try and work on those bits of techniques we've got, and make sure that you're sitting tall, you've got your body rock over in the correct position, your core turned on, take a really quick catch with the feet and drive it on through, and try and make it a really smooth flowing movement that's nice and relaxed. And you'll find if you do that, then you'll get pretty good outcomes on the ergo. And if you're rowing on the water, then those same techniques will translate to the boat really well.
So if you want to see any of those videos that we've been talking about today describing, you can head to our website. If you're a member, you can log in. It's under the playlists tab, 15 common mistakes and solutions for rowing on the ergo. If you're not a member, you can sign up for a free membership. We've got a 1-week free trial, so you can see if a paid membership might be for you. If you are thinking about signing up for a paid membership, we'd really appreciate it if you did. It allows us to keep building decent rowing and make it into a better resource for rowers. So all our members get access to our library of over 850 videos. We also have other training resources like training programs, wall charts, and things like that, which are good for beginners learning technique, as well as some on-water rowing courses. We've just done a new one for 2021 on-water rowing course. And yeah, that's 2 hours and 13 lessons, which is really good for learning how to row, but there's a lot of more advanced things in there too that, while it's good for beginners to learn, lots of people who've been rowing for a long time still haven't mastered the little aspects. So until next time, happy rowing.